I had a chance at the end of last year. The worship team, we took a trip to Top Golf. Has anybody ever been to Top Golf? Are there any golfers here? I was just checking to make sure Ken raised his hand. Golf is something I don't understand. We had a great time, but I am not a good golfer. Because to me, the thought is like the harder you hit the ball, right, the further it should go. That just kind of makes sense. If you crush it, then it's going to fly. And that's not exactly how it works in golf. Less is more sometimes. And life is like that. There's a lot of things that we run into in life that are the same way. But in Jesus, especially in his ministry, we see kind of these upside down rules for the kingdom. If you want to be first, then you need to be last. And if you want to gain your life, you need to lose it. And if you want to go up, then you need to go down. And if you want to receive, then you have to give. And it just seems counterintuitive, right? But it's these rules for an upside down kingdom. And that's what we look at today. It holds true in the parable that we're going to look at together. This is one of the most popular parables, one of the most common, most people know this parable, and it's only takes place in Luke. We know it as the parable of the prodigal son, but this morning we've called it the parable of the compassionate father, and hopefully we can see why that title really fits as we come to the end. But as we start this today, we want to recognize who's in the audience. And Luke tells us in the first verse of chapter 15, he's telling us that he's talking to the tax collectors, and Jesus is talking to the sinners. And if you're like me, then I kind of see the tax collectors as these guys that take a little extra for themselves, right? Sometimes they charge higher rates than they're supposed to. You definitely want to be on their good side. They're greedy. They have unequal scales. We see that, but it's even more offensive than that. These guys represent Rome. They're essentially outposts for Rome. And so, yeah, they're pocketing the money that they can, and they're charging rates that are crazy, but they're also funding everything that Rome is about. And if you remember history, I mean, Rome did whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted, however they wanted, and it was about conquest and conquering. They would rape and pillage, and they would kill, and they would just take over as much as they can because their goal was to conquer the known world. And these guys represented, in a sense, Rome, and so everything that they did was to help support that campaign. And so these are bad dudes through the eyes of the people that saw them. And then we also find that they're sinners, tax collectors and sinners. And we would consider, hopefully we recognize this, right, that as we gather here, that we are all sinners. But in that context, sinners were the people that were crippled. They were the lepers, right? They'd have to shout that they're unclean everywhere they go. They're the outcasts of society. They're the people of ill repute. They're prostitutes. These are people who don't have any way. Really, there's no bridge for them to come back into society. There's places set aside for them to hang out. They're expected to be outside, but they're not welcomed in, and there's really no way for them to come back. And so that's part of the crowd. And then in addition to that, we have the Pharisees. And we know a little bit about the Pharisees. They always get the bad rap. But the biggest thing with them, remember, is their system. I think it's helpful to recognize that part of what they're going for, right, their heart is that they want to know about God to some capacity, right? Their system is completely screwed up. That's why they and Jesus have this huge conflict. But they know more than we do. At least they know a lot more than I do. They memorized the first five books of the Bible. I don't mean the titles of the first five books of the Bible. I mean they memorized every word of the first five books of the Bible. That's just the tip of the iceberg. These guys knew their stuff. And there's a part of them that wants to honor God. It's just that they really believed it was done through the law, and they were missing it. And so there's a little bit of grace for them as we kind of enter in this story, but we want to understand who Jesus is speaking to as this story begins. And so they're the ones that kind of get this whole thing rolling because they're among the crowd, and they say to Jesus, point to him, whatever it looked like, muttered is I think what it says, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. And they're accusing Jesus of being lax on sin. From their point of view, remember, they're all about this law. From their point of view, this guy doesn't seem to care at all about what sin is because he just keeps blowing through it like it's not even there. And then Jesus answers with the three parables that we're familiar with. There's a parable of the sheep, right? You have 100 sheep. We sang about it this morning. One's lost, and they go find the lost sheep, and the shepherd puts it on his shoulders, no doubt symbolic of Jesus, and carries him back to the fold. And we're told that there is more rejoicing over that one sheep that has returned than there is of the 99 righteous. Side note, there's no 99 righteous. That's a shot at the Pharisees. And then we find the woman with the 10 coins, right? She has this collection, and she loses a coin, and she tries to find it. She flips her house upside down, and she finally finds the coin, and we're told that there's more rejoicing with the angels in heaven over that found coin. And we're not going to spend the majority of our time on those two, but they definitely set up where we're headed with these two sons, right? This father that has two sons. So I'm going to read that. This is the beginning in verse 11, chapter 15, verse 11. Then Jesus said, a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that will belong to me. So he divided his assets between them. And after a few days, the younger son gathered together all he had and left on a journey to a distant country. And there he squandered his wealth with a wild lifestyle. Then after he had spent everything, a severe famine came in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and worked for one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. So if they're listening to it, they're terribly offended, right? I mean, even today we can kind of grasp this. You imagine a high school kid coming home and going, hey, Dad, I think you and Mom should sell the house. That tiny home thing, I think it'd work great for you. And really, you don't need two cars. Like, one's fine. And that fancy one, you don't need that level of a car. Just because I was thinking I wanted to travel the world. Europe's got some cool things, right? I mean, that's kind of a ridiculously loose translation. But in that day, what that son's saying to his dad, you guys know this, he's asking him to be dead. And it would have been, truly would have been considered kindness had the father excommunicated him from the family and sent him out of that community. That would have been considered kind. It would have been acceptable for him to kill them on the spot. That's what they expected. Truly. If you go look, that's what they expected. And this dad, man, this is crazy. This dad listens to him and he hands him the inheritance. How messed up is that? Their minds are blown, right? All of them, the whole audience, some of them are kind of going, where's he going with this? And they follow the story. But here's probably what happened, right? Is what they would have understood is that the younger son would have gotten a third of the inheritance. The older son, double portion, would have gotten two-thirds. And it probably took him a few days because he's getting livestock and he's getting land, and that son doesn't want anything to do with those, right? If you're a business guy, that's the dude you want to buy from because it's going cheap, right? He doesn't care about return on investment. He doesn't care about top dollar. He's like, I want out of here. Give me my money because I'm gonna go have a good time. That's what he does. Then he goes to a foreign country, and he spends everything without any kind of consideration or thought to what's happening. So we come up with the prodigal. Means wasteful, prodigal son. But he says no to everything he says yes to. There's no resistance in him. If he sees it, he takes it. If he wants it, he grabs it. There's no acknowledgement of, hey, these resources came from somewhere. There's no consideration for what's going to happen in the future. He's living his best life now, and he's just having a great time. Just having a real great time. And all of a sudden, as you guys know, the famine hits. And now he's in trouble because he hasn't put any thought into that. He's just been self-serving this entire time. And, you know, I think there's room for this in the story as I read it. It's a little bit of speculation. But, there's nobody to care for this guy. So whether he's throwing parties or whatever he's doing, nobody reaches back out to him because there's a good chance he hasn't reached out to anybody with all this wealth he had. He just spent it completely on himself. And he ends up hiring himself out to this pig farmer. It's a questionable job. Even as the pig farmer, they would have known this Jew that came into their community. He hands this guy a job as a Jew feeding pigs. I mean, who knows what's going on right there? You could speculate a lot of things. But he finds himself feeding pigs, and he comes to the end of himself because he realizes, man, it was better than this at home. And I know Dad, and I know his love, and man, I better let me work for him. And so the scriptures tell us that he comes to his senses. So this is in... You didn't know where I was going, did you? So he comes to his senses and he realized, man, I can pay this off. He practices his speech, the verse right before that, in verse 19. He says, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. Now it's verse 19. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired workers. And these are powerful words. So he got up and he went to his father. He didn't just run his mouth. He didn't think about all the stuff he could do. He put himself in a position. What it demonstrates is his humility. He finally comes to his senses and he goes back home. And if you let yourself go into that story. Maybe you haven't blown everything, but maybe you have. But if you've ever paid attention to what happens inside of you when you sin, when something's ahead of you and you know better, but you can't stop thinking about it, and you become consumed and you lose touch with reality and you find yourself in a place that you kind of are stunned and you wake up and realize, like, why did I do that? And the guilt and the shame and everything kicks in. That's what's happening with this guy, but it's a prolonged period of time. So he finally decides he's going to go home. And everybody listening at that point is going, yeah, that makes sense. It's kind of a weird story, but at least he's going to go pay it off. And okay, I guess I can see where he's going with this. But that's not how it happens, right? It tells us that, so he put feet to it, he heads home, and then it says, later part of verse 20, but while he was still a long way from home, his father saw him, and his heart went out to him, and he ran and hugged his son and kissed him. And then his son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. So picture this, right? His dad's sitting there. It seems like he's always looking on the horizon in the evening. He wakes up looking for him in the morning, and everybody's kind of tired of him, like holding out hope for something that's never going to happen. But he never gives up. He never, never, never gives up. And finally the day comes, and, you know, he's got that robe or tunic or whatever you call that thing, that man dress, right? And he pulls it up. He pulls it up, and he takes off running. And these guys are kind of like trying to figure out what's happening because they see him disappearing over the hill. And like, what is he doing? And these servants are running to catch up. And he comes to the son, and he wants to be the first one to meet him outside the city before anybody else does because he wants him to know that you are welcomed home. Right, and he runs to him and he hugs him. And the scriptures say that he kissed him, but the word there really says he kisses him much. How many of you guys have a kid that when you know he needs you, you just love on him and you love on him, and it's like you can't love on him enough. And he's communicating with his actions that you, son, have always been my son, that you're welcome here, and that we're okay. Like, he's reconciled. And so about that time, you know, son's starting, he had his speech, right? Hey, yeah, dad, you know, I've sinned against heaven. In other words, I've sinned against God, and I've sinned against you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me your hired servant. And about that time, the servants are showing up, and the father doesn't really even respond to him. Do you notice that? In verse 21, here's the father's response. Verse 20 is what the son says. Let's read this real quick so you guys know I'm not making it up. Verse 21, this his son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. And here's how the father responds. But father said to his slaves, hurry. Didn't even talk to his son. He turns, and in action, he says, hurry. And he tells him to go get what? The robe, go get the ring, go get the sandals, and let's go kill the fattened calf. And what he's communicating is, let me clothe you. Let me cover your shame. Let me welcome you home. Let me give you the best I have to give. Let me give you the ring, which is there's tie to the family, but there's also, that's a financial transaction that he's doing right there. He's signing binding contracts. It didn't end well with this guy before, but the father's completely reinstating him, and then he's putting sandals on his feet. That means he's not a slave. Slaves did not wear sandals, and he's killing the fattened calf. He's throwing not just a party that's big for the family. He's throwing an entire party for the whole community and potentially those even around. And so we recognize what's happening there is that the father is celebrating his son's return home. But the other thing that we got to see this, the other thing that's happening is that the father is celebrating that his plan has worked. So Paul tells us in Romans which is a book written to Christians, that he'll give us over to our sin in hopes that we'll return home. And we've got to see that the father in love gave the inheritance. And how backwards is this? This sounds weird for us even today. But it was incredibly weird for them then. And yet he celebrates his son coming home. And the other thing that the audience is hearing is this. They would have thought by this point that he's lost his sonship, right? I mean, the dude asked for his inheritance while his dad was alive. You're gone. You're done. You're no longer a part of the family. That's it. Not only that, he took the money and lost it, but he lost it to Gentiles, which really in their mind associates him with Gentiles. Not only that, in his state of need, he didn't head home, man. He went and worked for a pig farmer. Like, how low do you have to go before you figure this thing out is kind of what they're thinking. And yet the father, as we see in his actions, that is never on the table. He's lost relationship in a sense. He's lost fellowship, but he has never lost his standing with the father because every day that dad was looking for him. And we've got to see that happening in this story. And everything changes with one word, right? We know this word, grace. Everything changes. It's unmerited favor. Grace costs something. It's very expensive. It costs the giver, but it doesn't cost the receiver. We've heard about that a lot this morning. We saw that in the video with the persecuted church. It's expensive. We see that with parents that have children. It's expensive, not just in money, but in time and effort and energy. But this is grace that God is giving through the story. And so what happens, too, is that the Pharisees and the tax collectors, as they're hearing this story, are seething. They're so angry they can hardly stand it. And Jesus knows this. And that's when the story starts to shift. And it is the pinnacle, right? There's this massive feast. There's a huge party. There's singing, there's dancing. There's no question. And they're pulling out all the stops. And the Pharisees are just shaking their head going, this guy has lost it. This is the stuff that got Jesus nailed to the cross. And so the older brother, right, that's where we're at now. So the story shifts to him. And the older brother's coming in from the field because, guys, he's doing what was expected of him. That's what he was supposed to do. He was working for the Father and he was faithful. And that is included. So he's coming in, he's trying to figure out what's going on because there's a commotion, there's people everywhere, and there's music, and he sees dancing, and it's this big feast. And he asks his servant, what's going on? And this is verse 27. He replied, your brother has returned, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he got his son back safe and sound. And then we know how the son reacts. He becomes angry. He's furious. And you almost see him like cross his arms, take a couple steps back, and you see the steam coming out of his head because this is ridiculous. I mean, the dude that just wasted all of our money, like he came back, so we threw him a party? Like, what? He's offended. And he becomes enraged, and we know that as the story continues. But watch what happens. Man, this is beautiful. What happens is he backs off, refuses to go in. The rest of verse 28 says his father came out and appealed to him. And here again we see the compassionate love of the father, that he leaves the party, and he knows where his son is, and he goes out to meet him, and he appeals to him. And you know what's really cool about that word appealed? Is that there's a lot of different things that can mean. But there's three that are especially important for the context that we're talking about. One of them could mean probably what most of us gather. He comes out to exhort his son, and he's saying, hey, reconsider the way you're framing this. Don't see it through your eyes. Look at it through my eyes. Recognize that this is the right thing to do, right? Change the way you're seeing this, because it's not accurate. The other thing that it can mean is it can mean comfort in the terms of encouragement. That there's this amount of empathizing that's happening where the father's going, buddy, like I know what this feels like because I know that you feel overlooked. And I know that you've been here the whole time. You've done everything I've asked you to do. And I know it looks crazy, but he's hurting with him. And the father knows this, man. He's going through it too. But he's in it with him. And he's in his world and he's hurting for him. And he's giving him space to be angry. He's giving him space to be hurt. And then there's the third thing that it could mean, which is invitation. And the father's saying, there's a seat for you at the table. Like, come in. There's a place for you. We want you there. And so the son doesn't necessarily hear that, right? I don't know. This is a pretty fast fight. At least that's how I envision this as it's happening. And I'm a lot like the older brother. It takes me a while to get things. So here's how the older brother responds. His father has come out. Met him there, appealed to him. He's done those three things. But, this is verse 29, excuse me. But he answered his father, look, these many years I've worked like a slave for you. I never disobeyed your commands, yet you never gave me even a goat that I could go celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours has come back, who's devoured your assets with prostitutes, you killed a fattened calf for him. Can you see that? I mean, I get it. I understand. But he reveals his heart in that, and there's a couple things we want to pick up on. How did he see himself toward the father? I mean, first there's the look piece, right? I don't know that this is a respectful interaction. Like, hey, Dad, could you consider it from my point of view? I'm not seeing that with the look. So there's an amount of disrespect likely happening right there. But the really big thing is the slave piece. Do you remember what the younger son's plan was? I'm going to be a slave. I'm going to go back. I'll work for Dad. I'll pay it off. Dad didn't take that. And the older brother has kind of, he's stuck in the same kind of system. In his mind, he's been there slaving away all these years, working out of obligation. Some of your Bibles say servant, but the original word, it's obligatory servant. It's forced servitude. And he sees, this older brother sees in his mind, it's not a partnership. He's not in this with the Father. He's doing what he's got to do so that when his time comes, he can do it his way. But he doesn't understand the Father any more than the younger son understands him. And then we also see how that contrasts with the younger son. And do you see how backwards this is? You've got a guy that completely blew it. There's no question to it. He's lost the inheritance. It's gone. It's completely gone. And there are real consequences for that. But in the end, he comes with a broken heart and a contrite spirit, and he's humble as he approaches the Father, and the Father welcomes him in. There's a party. And then you've got a son who's done everything right. He's done exactly what his dad asked him to do, which, side note, real fast, without trying to lose my train of thought here, has he really done everything the dad asked him to do? I mean, is the moment that we're looking at not an illustration that maybe he doesn't do everything dad asked him to do? Because he completely misses the father's heart. But anyway, end of rabbit trail, you have the younger son and the older son, and the contrast between somebody did everything right, older brother did everything right, his heart was hardened. Younger son did everything wrong, but his heart was humble. See, the older brother didn't miss it because he was hurt. He didn't miss it because he was angry. It was the hurt that led to the anger, that led to the bitterness, that led to the resentment, that led to the refusal, that eventually came to a place where he was so hardened that he cannot receive what he needs to receive. See, the grace that was afforded to the younger son is extended to the older son. He just doesn't need it, or at least he doesn't think he needs it. And he finds himself in a place where he's self-righteous, and he's outside the party. And if you think about this, right, there's when you think about arguments, there's still this back and forth. And then there's this final statement. So the son's kind of, what I'm trying to say is we get outraged. I don't know about you guys, when I'm yelling, I don't always say things that I mean. So in my mind, as we're reading this, this is the older son spouting out things that have been in his heart, things that he believes. And then the father responds, and this is the last thing said. The father responds with truth, right? Because if you're like me, when I'm angry, I'm not seeing clearly. I do not always, you can ask my wife, like, did you really just say that? But the son saying what he has, and the father responds, and I want you to see that as the father responds, this is in love that he's saying this, trying again to get the older son to see the truth. Then the father said to him, son, you are always with me, and everything that belongs to me is yours. It was appropriate to celebrate and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and he's found, right? Do you remember how this started? Jesus stops it there. Why? Do you remember how this all started? You had these Pharisees and scribes, and they're saying, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. And now you have, well, lost sheep, found sheep, lost coin, found coin, lost younger son, found younger son, question mark, right? We don't know how the older son responds. That's left open. But again, you have them accusing Jesus, you welcome sinners and you eat with them. But what if he accepted it? What if the older brother took the invitation and he took the exhortation from the father and he changed his mind, he changed his heart, he repented, that's what change of heart is. He chose to go in. Because if he would have gone in, he would have found himself welcomed to a table, sitting with sinners, not the least of which would have been him. You see, we don't ever outgrow our need for God's grace. We're saved by grace, and we grow by grace, and he never gets tired of giving it to us. All that it requires is that we humble ourselves, and that we recognize our need, and that we take it. Does that make sense? That's as far as my computer memory can go. So when you think about this, though, that God's grace is only offensive to those of us who feel like we need to earn it. Only offensive to those of us who resist it. But to the lost, man, Is there anything better than God's grace? And God, he meets us in our lostness. And he waits patiently for us to return. Jesus is not lax on sin. He's rich in love. And as you hear this story today, the thing we're supposed to do is we're supposed to see ourselves somewhere in that story. See, the main message of Luke is to seek, and you've heard that already, to seek and to save the lost. The lost are not just those who don't know Christ. The lost are any of us who try to live apart from God. And so as we kind of end today, the thing you want to look at is, where do you fit in that story? Where do you land? Because we're supposed to find ourselves somewhere in there. Maybe you're the prodigal son in the sense that you really do find it difficult to believe that God has what's best in store for you. Or maybe you're the prodigal son in the sense that you're trying to find what only God provides in other places and in other ways. You want what he gives to you, but you want to spend it on yourself, and you don't want to spend it in the context that he's given it to you in. Or maybe you're like the prodigal son where you really have lost everything and you've made a wreck of your life, and you're really at a place where you think, man, there's no way I can be taken back. And that is not the truth of God, because we learn in this story is that he's just waiting, and he'll run to you the minute you turn. Maybe you're like the older brother. Maybe you're one of those, I can identify with all these guys, man. Maybe you're one of those as the older brother where you know Jesus, and you can look and you put some mileage in, like you've been faithful and you have served him and you've done what he's asked, but somehow you still got it in your brain that you somehow can earn a standing with him, that somehow he can be his displeasure with you, right? Like, hey, if I serve, he loves me. If I don't, he doesn't love me. If I don't sin, he loves me, but if I do sin, he doesn't. I hope we're blowing holes in that. Because your love for who you are, there's nothing we can do to make God love us anymore. Nothing. And there's nothing we can do to make God love us any less. Nothing. We just have to receive it. Or maybe you're like the older brother in the sense that you've felt ripped off, because in doing everything that you've done, you feel like God owes you an explanation. He hasn't checked in with you whether you could kill the fattened calf. He hasn't checked in with you to make sure that he can do X, Y, and Z. He doesn't need to check in with you. Or maybe you're like the older brother because you're offended. You're offended at the way God chooses to love and who he chooses to love and the way he chooses to love. And I'm not trying to come down hard on the older brother. I want you to see, because I want to see, that both of these sons are invited. They're both loved, deeply loved by the Father. There's a third category, and that's the prodigal son returned. And that's the son who's home, who's enjoying the feast, who knows the love of the Father, and who abides in him. And wherever you find yourself today, you've got to remember this, that you are invited. You're invited to come home, you're invited to come in, and you're invited to stay. And all of that is because of the compassionate love of the Father. Would you guys pray with me? Father, I thank you, God, for this morning and just for the powerful truth of what we're learning about you even now, that your love is so rich and so powerful and so beyond what we can comprehend, that it has the ability to pull us out of the darkest places, that it has the power to save the most vile of humans, God, that it has the ability to change us forever. And this morning, as we gather in this place, Lord, we ask that you would help us to receive the love that you have given to us through your son, Jesus. We pray that it wouldn't be an empty gesture, God, but that you would work in our hearts in such a way that we could reach out and grab it. Pray all these things, Jesus, in your mighty name. Amen.